Is
to
it?
Pull one out like that. But what I can
you've got 2,000 years of civilization to choose from.
I know, but I did begin the show
by saying, didn't I, that you're very, very silly if you support all strikes, and you're very, very silly if you oppose all of them.
No, I think you've got to be.
And here you are. You can't think of a single strike. James, you can't think of a single strike you've ever supported.
I'll check back with you later.
It's coming up to 11 o'clock. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. A fairly neat analysis of what not understanding industrial action sounds like, though. So I'm very grateful to you, Jonathan. It's just gone 11 o'clock. You are listening. Well, you know who you're listening to. If you don't know by now, then frankly, I can't help you.
On your radio, on Global Player, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, the head of the Unite Union has given her strongest warning yet that bin strikes in Birmingham could spread. Refuse workers, who say their pay is being cut by up to £8,000, voted against a new pay offer yesterday. Sharon Graham says workers are paying the price for council's poor decisions. The Trade Minister, Sarah Jones, who's been speaking to LBC, has called on Unite to accept the proposal.
We need to be really clear on this. It's completely unacceptable. The images from Birmingham and my family are there, are just awful, and people deserve better. Unite need to call off the strike and accept the deal on the table. It's a good deal, and that's what they need to do.
More discussions are planned for tomorrow. The race to keep the blast furnaces burning at British Steel in Scunthorpe appears to be close to a conclusion. Raw material supplies have now docked in Lincolnshire. LBC's Alex Taylor-Brown has more.
We're expecting two shipments of the raw materials needed to keep the blast furnaces burning to arrive today. Iron ore and coking coal will be transported from the ships at the port of Immingham, about 20 miles east of Scunthorpe. The Department for Business and Trade says the money to buy them's come from its existing budget. Chinese owners Jingye had reportedly refused to pay for the materials. Alex Taylor-Brown, LBC, Scunthorpe.
Figures released this morning show the number of employees on companies' books fell by 78,000 in March. There was also a sharp drop in job vacancies, another sign of the weakening jobs market in the UK. Foreign ministers from around the world are meeting in London to discuss the peace process in Sudan. The summit marks 2 years since the country's civil war began. The Foreign Secretary, David Lammy, has announced a £120 million package of food and aid. Britain's oldest Indian restaurant could be forced to close in a row with the Crown Estate. The Viraswamy, which opened on London's Regent Street in 1926, has been told its lease won't be renewed. The King's property portfolio says it wants to carry out a comprehensive refurbishment of the building. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was up 75 at 82.09. The pound buys $1.32 and a euro 16. LBC weather, rain continuing in central and southern areas. Drier in the north with sunny spells. A high of 18 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
With so many cars on offer in the Volkswagen approved used sale, we don't have time to name them all. But we brought in Speed Talker Lightning Steve to try.
Offers now on the Golf, Tiguan, T-Roc, Tiger, Passat, Polo, T-Cross, ID4, T-Roc.
Get £750 towards your finance deposit on over 13,000 approved use Volkswagens. With 13.4% APR representative on Solutions PCP and a free service plan. Our huge sale must end on Wednesday the 30th of April at participating retailers. Faster, Steve.
ID3, Turan.
Search Volkswagen approved used. Indemnities may be required. Free service plan valid for cars up to 8 years old. Excludes Touareg. Volkswagen Finance.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 11. Why do you think and I was very delighted to see it still in the bestsellers lists when I went through the airport at the weekend, but why do you think that brilliant author Lawrence Rees, who spoke to us about his book The Nazi Mind, has had a bearing upon my thoughts about Keir Starmer's insistence that they will definitely be giving the vote to 16-year-olds. It wasn't in the King's Speech, was it? I think some people made a little bit of a fuss about that, but it just means that it's not on the top of his to-do list. But he has said this week that It's a commitment we made. It's a commitment we intend to keep. It was in the manifesto, but not in the King's speech. This is a commitment to giving 16 and 17-year-olds the right to vote in all elections. Now, I'll leave you thinking. I'll leave you pondering that, but I will probably remember to answer the question before 11:15. And what I want you to do here is really have a think. Sorry, I know it's Tuesday, but the weather's not great. It's not like you've got a lot else you could do. I really want to have a think about what it means to give the vote to 16 and 17-year-olds. And what you need to do, I think most helpfully, is you need to jettison thoughts of your favourite 16-year-old. You can't base this answer, can you, on one 16-year-old. So you can't say, as Charles Corran writes in the Times this morning, you can't say my children are morons and therefore giving the vote to 16-year-olds would be a ridiculous idea, or my child is a genius and therefore giving the vote to 16-year-olds is long overdue and a brilliant notion. I don't know if you can do that. I also don't know how different your political opinions are now from what they were when you were 16 or 17. I mean, if you look at the Brexit vote, then it is largely much older people who were most enthusiastic about voting to smash themselves in the face with a frying pan for the rest of eternity, economically speaking. So I do find that argument quite compelling. There is no earthly way that the 16 and 17-year-olds seeking the vote could use it to such epic national sabotage as what the 60 and 70-year-olds did with it in 2016 in that referendum. Albeit an awful lot of effort was put in to persuading you of things that weren't true, but quite a lot of people are still clinging to the carcass of the notion that it was anything but idiocy. I don't think it's even true so much anymore that teenagers typically lean to the left, but on the other hand, they are more susceptible to extremism. So that perhaps gives you a clue as to why I find myself wondering, after I think a lifetime of believing that you can't have too many voters in a democracy, and 16 is a cut-off point in so many other areas, you're old enough to pay taxes, then you should really be entitled to have a say on how your taxes are spent. That is Keir Starmer's logic. I also don't want to be Anglo-centric. I don't want to be England-centric, because it has already happened in different parts of the United Kingdom and the sky did not fall in. James reminds me, 16-year-olds can already vote for governments in Scotland, the Isle of Man, Jersey and Guernsey. Why should the English be different? And that's a really good question. But I'm not sure it's quite as straightforward as I used to think it was. One colleague said to me this morning, 16-year-olds are idiots, which is a horrible and sweeping generalisation, but it isn't without a kernel of truth. So I wonder whether the best way to answer this question is actually not to imagine your favourite 16-year-old, but to imagine 16-year-old you. Well, that doesn't work either, does it? Because you might think, I was so politically engaged. I was doing a politics A-level when I was 16. Of course I should have had the vote. I knew more about politics at the age of 16 than the average Brexit voter did at the age of 65. Okay, a bit arrogant. But if you've done an A-level in politics, then are you more politically qualified to vote? If you're in the middle of an A-level in politics, are you more politically qualified to vote than somebody who has never opened a newspaper in their life? Somebody who never watches the news? Someone who is not remotely politically engaged? Sorry, the colleague said that they are nuts. Not what word did I use a moment ago? Not idiots, nuts. No, they said 16-year-olds are nuts. No clues at all as to who that colleague is. But 16-year-olds are nuts, not idiots. That's quite an important distinction. 16-year-olds are nuts. I had a friend who used to come out of the pub, and I know we were drinking underage, and he couldn't walk past scaffolding without climbing up it. It's a miracle he's still alive to tell the tale. He would not do that now, not with his knees. But 16-year-olds can be a little bit nuts. And yet I look at what the adults have done in recent years, and I genuinely, this isn't me just being mischievous or provocative for the sake of it, I genuinely find myself thinking they can't be any more nuts than the grown-ups, can they? They can't be any more nuts than the adults who are currently enfranchised. So, 9 minutes after 11, I want to know what you think about this, but crucially, I want to know why you think it. And I suspect that the strongest views will be held by the youngest people who really want to vote. It's quite a weird thing to say to someone, isn't it? Particularly in the context of the last few years of political movement, that you have no say in the direction that your country is going to take. And remember, there can be a five-year gap. So it could be the day before your 18th birthday. You're going to be practically, give or you're going to be 23 potentially, as near as damn it, before you actually get to cast a vote. You could have finished, you could have gone 3 years at university, 2 years in the workshop, in the workforce, and now you're allowed to have a vote. I know the same applies. If you get the vote at 16, it could still be 5 years until you get a vote, but 21 feels a lot younger than 23. I've always liked this idea, but something Lawrence Rees said when he was talking to us about the Nazi mind, it turns out, has been just bubbling away in the back of my brain ever since. And I think I might actually remind you of what it was he said. The elements of the new psychological insights, it's obedience, authority and the brain.
Yeah, and also, crucially, something I hadn't realised at all, which is the corruption of people, of youth under 25. I hadn't realised. So the bit that's coming in, where essentially you've got absolute rationality, prefrontal cortex, it's the bit that says, don't have that second piece of cake, it's going to make you fat, for God's sake. You know. So that bit is not fully developed in people until they're 25. It's not fully developed. It's why people under 25 are much more impulsive, much more capable of going off doing crazy things. It's not fully developed. So you see that the Nazis appealed in the 30s to a disproportionate number of people under 25.
Wow.
And they're doing it because, and Hitler is deliberately in his speeches saying, come on, boys, excitement, we can do it. And the whole pseudo-Darwinianism, life's about, if you want it, just take it. It's absolutely playing into this, because that bit, for other reasons he explained to me, isn't developed in us till we're 25 fully.
So it's our atavistic or primitive self that is being appealed to. It's a great piece I read recently by the novelist Edward Docks about ogres.
Yes.
And using Trump alongside Grendel out of Beowulf and Polyphemus out of the Greek. That's what he appeals to. He's essentially telling people that you can indulge all of your appetites.
Yes, but that, you see, this is, because what I couldn't understand when I started meeting these people is how, for many of these former Nazis, life had been really boring since this had gone away. Because, I think someone said to me, that you cannot imagine the excitement. The thing about Hitler was that what absolutely turned him on was radicalism. And you soon learnt that if you work for him, and he sometimes would make two or three people appoint to the same job and never say who's, cause as part of his Darwinian process, and never say who was actually in charge, the way you had power was to come up with a radical solution. And it may not even be that he accepted it. A person we interviewed for the original Nazi series said he heard Hitler say he was annoyed with his generals because he said, I want my generals to be bulldogs on chains. Brr, and I'm holding them back. That's what I want. And he said, I'm having to excite them. No, no, no. They need to be like that. And I'm restraining them.
So you could use that as a basis for suggesting that 16-year-olds shouldn't get the vote, but if you were to take it to its logical conclusion, then you shouldn't get the vote until you're over 25. Is that the phone-in? What about only having votes for the over-25s? I don't know if a Labour Party would ever get in, would it? And the demographics change. I mean, as Lawrence pointed out there in that book, if you're wondering, called The Nazi Mind, 12 Lessons, 12 Warnings from History, is a blooming masterpiece. And the genius of what he's done, I said this at the time, but you may not have been listening, is avoid entirely any explicit references to the modern world. It is entirely confined to the era in which the Nazis operated. There are obvious parallels. That is why the subtitle of the book is 12 Warnings from History. But he lets the warnings make themselves. He doesn't have to point out parallels or similarities because they will jump off the page and slap you around the face with a wet kipper. But, of course, it's not an open and shut case that because these brains, these unformed brains, are so easily corrupted, if you like, or so easily influenced, they shouldn't have the vote. Because that applies until 25, in its most extreme cases. And, of course, it applies afterwards. I mean, where would politics in this country be if significant numbers of people still didn't fall for the snake oil and nonsense spouted by Nigel Farage? The Liz Truss Donald Trump fan who claims to represent, I don't know who he's claiming to represent, ordinary working people. And that is not something that you suddenly grow out of when you are 25. And Scotland are, as in many areas, ahead of the rest of us, Scotland and other parts of the United Kingdom. I like this message from, I'm not going to find it now, from Sharon. We have voting from 16 in Scotland. In Scottish government elections, it has a very high uptake. All pupils at school study modern studies, political issues and processes in the UK and international society. It's the most popular exam subject to take after maths and English. So I think the last hour was quite punchy. A couple of calls from the perspective of refuse workers, bin men and women, shouldn't be on strike. I don't think I want this to be punchy. I think I would have done this punchy in the past, but I don't think it's an open and shut case, partly because of what Lawrence Rees said, partly because of what my colleague said about 16-year-olds being nuts, partly because of the journeys we all go on. None of these are nails in the coffin of votes for 16-year-olds, but I just wonder whether it is a slightly more nuanced subject than I personally have previously allowed, which is why fascinated I am by what you think. I am almost always on this programme much, much more interested in why you think it. So it's not like a plebiscite where we just stick our hand in the air if we're in favour and leave it in our pockets if we're not. I really want to know the thinking behind what you do, because I have struggled to come up with a template for this. I said, don't just think of your favourite 16-year-old, or don't just think of your least favourite 16-year-old, and don't think of your 16-year-old self, because that's not representative. But what is? So I think I'd have been fairly reliable to cast a vote when I was 16, but I don't think you would have been, or vice versa. And if you got two children, you might think one would have been brilliant. One was much more thoughtfully engaged with politics than their parents were. But the other one couldn't tell you who the Prime Minister is. Do you see what I mean? I don't know how you arrive at the conclusion you've arrived at, which is why I want you to tell me. 0345 6060 973 is the number you need. At the moment, just so you know, the biggest obstacle to me opposing votes for 16-year-olds is the absolutely incontrovertible evidence on both sides of the Atlantic and far beyond that much, much older people shouldn't have been given the vote in the first place. It's 11:17.
This is LBC.
Do you ever feel like getting back under your duvet in the middle of the day? Ferroglobin is a great-tasting liquid formula with iron, which contributes to the reduction of tiredness and fatigue and normal formation of haemoglobin. Ferroglobin, from Vitabiotics, at Boots, pharmacies and vitabiotics.com.
This Easter at Lidl, we won't be beaten on price on our pick of the week veg. That's 2 kilograms of potatoes, a bag of parsnips, green beans or carrots, a swede, a bunch of spring onions, all for just 15p each. Now that's big on quality, and always Lidl on price.
Subject to availability, selected stores, GB only. See lidl.co.uk/spendless for details.
Who's up for making tracks? Fly from London Gatwick to Saudi Arabia from just £134.99 one way. Spend less than you thought on flights and more on fun stuff like dune bashing in the desert. Fly low cost from the UK to over 80 incredible destinations, including Jeddah. Book now at wizzair.com. Conditions apply.
I think it was 1998 when my savings fell asleep. Since then, they've sat in the same account, earning half what they could. But this year, I found Flagstone. With their savings platform, I can open multiple high-interest accounts from over 60 banks, all in one place, with one password. Now, it's easy to manage my cash and watch it rise. Wake up your cash today with Flagstone's savings platform. Flagstone, where savings never sleep. Terms and minimum deposits apply. Search Flagstone.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £34 million.
Now that calls for a dance.
Do I have to?
You can limbo. That's it.
With these moves, I might just hit the jackpot.
Very good.
Get that Euro Millions feeling tonight. Euro Millions from the National Lottery. Play on app. Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
19 minutes after 11. How can your 16-year-old self not be representative? Everybody has one, and you can't choose a different one, right, Steve, who describes himself as confused in France. I just meant it's not representative of anyone except you, Steve, so you can't really arrive at a conclusion about all 16-year-olds by looking through the lens of what you were like when you were 16. But the more I talk about this, the more knots I'm tying myself in. What else are you going to do? Who can take a view? Teachers. Teachers can take a view. Sixth form teachers can take a view on whether lower six and upper six students are less equipped, more equipped, or not equipped to cast a vote compared to older people. And I'm back to Chris in Lincoln on this one. Should the more important question be, at what age should we stop being able to vote because so many older citizens are unable to understand and grasp the modern world of work and the experiences of younger generations? And Chris got his message read out because he began it by writing, I love you like a brother, James. But if 16 and 17-year-olds are to be disenfranchised due to lack of maturity or critical mental facilities, what about the older people? So I want to know what you think, but I really, really, really want to know why you think it. Lee's in Woking. Lee, what would you like to say?
Morning, James.
Hello, mate.
At the moment, in the current state of the world, I don't think 16-year-olds should have the vote right now. I think that comes down to, I look at myself, and I, as a 16-year-old, I didn't have the desire or the want to look deep enough into policies or governments that are on the plate and see what they can offer me as a 16-year-old.
Yeah. Do you not think you might have done if you had a vote?
No, to be very plainly, no. I think, thinking of when I was 16, living at home, going through the education system, it would have been very far down on my list of priorities as a 16, 17-year-old to look into that. And I think it's one of those things where, you know, my life's been
there. It's a terrible phone line, Lee. I don't know what you've done since you spoke to the producer, but I can't. I don't know. It's my age. My patience with terrible phone lines is really wearing thin at the moment. We'll try and get you back. Oddly, two thoughts listening to Lee. The first is, here is someone who was incredibly politically engaged when they were 16 and wants the vote for 16-year-olds. Do they just cancel each other out? That's the knot that I was tying myself in earlier. And he kind of pushed me in the opposite direction from the one that he was trying to lead me in, because I thought, well, you wouldn't just give them the vote. You'd do what they'd done in Scotland with that excellent point Sharon made about really bringing it into the curriculum, really driving home to children how valuable and powerful their vote is, using the medium in Scotland of what they call modern studies, the political issues and processes in the UK and international society. So you teach Lee, 16-year-old Lee, modern studies, and you impress upon him how important the vote is, and you take a disenfranchised, disengaged 16-year-old and turn them into an engaged 16-year-old with a vote. Taylor is in Glasgow. Taylor, what would you like to say?
Thank you for allowing me on the show, James.
You make it sound like there's a high bar, Taylor. Honestly, we'll let anyone on. fill your boots.
Well, it's my favourite show to listen to, your show.
Thank you, mate.
So I was a member of the Scottish Youth Parliament between 2015 and 2017, and I was also a member of the British Youth Parliament as well.
Okay.
Which I don't think a lot of young people are there, but at the same time, it was on the rise when I was part of it. Now,
yes.
We spoke in 2016, 2017 in Westminster, but some of the only other people allowed to speak in Westminster.
Yeah.
And we passed a motion for 16, 17-year-olds to vote. Yet Theresa May's government did not decide to take this further. Now, in Scotland, you can leave school at 16, you can join the army, you can get married, you can have a child, and in Scotland you can vote in Scottish elections, but you can't vote in Westminster elections. Now, I think that's because the union's too scared they're going to lose us, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
But if young people can become independent young adults and they want to be treated like that, why are they not allowed a democratic vote? They shouldn't be made to fight for it. You know, a lot of young people, as Sharon had said in that message, it's in schools, people are taught politics internationally. They're taught about the voting systems, especially of how the voting system works in Scotland and how the voting system works in the UK.
So they go hand in hand. I mean, it was missing from my introduction, actually. It took Sharon to get to make me give my head a wobble. You don't just suddenly announce tomorrow that also you do what they've done in Scotland and almost embark upon a programme of electoral education.
For sure.
Right.
And the one thing that I think that I don't like Nigel Farage, but the one thing I think his party have done well is their social media advertising.
Yeah, that's very
and
true.
And a lot of young people have looked at their stuff and went, oh, I quite like what he's saying, and not reading too much into it. And I think that
a lot of old people have done that as well, mate, albeit not through social media or not through TikTok, through Facebook and endless appearances on Question Time as well. But you're right. I mean, it does speak to an enfranchisement of younger people. And 16 is a logical cut-off point because, as you've reminded us, it's a cut-off point for so many other things.
Yeah, and that I think that's why there's been maybe such an uptake of reform down south of the border, because of their advertisement. And I think if, like in Scotland, politics was a more focused subject in school.
Yes.
Young people would be more educated and have a more educated guess on who they would like to vote for in their local constituency.
So the more education you have, the harder you are to bamboozle.
Exactly. It's not, you're not just the wool pulled over your eyes straight away kind of thing.
Which brings us to Donald Trump's attempts to punish universities in the United States of America and the fascistic program always of going after educators. I love that. Thank you, Taylor. What are you doing now? If you don't mind me asking, if that's not too nosy, what have you continued down a political path after your membership of both youth parliaments?
I fell out of love of politics after we left the EU. So I'm now working in the music industry.
Fair enough, actually. Of course, we need your generation to not necessarily lead us back into the EU, but to stay angry about what's been done to you by the older generations. And that's a valid point, isn't it? I talk about that demographic in the Badgett column in The Economist magazine this week, pointing out that so many people have passed away, and that seems to be the constituency that people like Keir Starmer and Kemi Badenoch are most worried about at the moment, largely as a consequence of Farage, as Taylor reminded us, and using social media, especially the really short stuff, the really sort of clippy stuff of social media, as an electoral tool, is a terrible enemy of proper democracy, because it means people are going to be more susceptible to ludicrous slogans and or racist lies. But hey-ho, gets you into the White House, it could get you into Downing Street. 11:26 is the time. Staying in Scotland, not surprisingly, I don't think, given that they're already there in some ways on this issue. Richie is in Edinburgh. Richie, what would you like to say?
Morning, James.
Hello, Richie.
Hi, I'm like I said to your colleague, I'm a serving member of the Royal Marines.
Oh, gosh.
I joined when I was 18, not 16.
Right.
But I do fit your parameters as well. I don't have children. My partner and I decided quite a while ago not to do that.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to favour...
Just pick your favourite 16-year-old, no.
Yeah. No, I'm not going to do that. But what I would say is, your colleague was asking me about the best example of what a 16-year-old in the military can do.
Yes.
That a 16-year-old outside the military can't do, sorry.
Yeah.
And I would say there's a task force that sometimes gets called up from the military called MAGA, the Military Assistance to Government Authorities.
Right.
So, for instance, the bin dispute in Birmingham, there will be several factors of the military that will get called in for that. So if you can use 16-year-olds in the military to combat a social or political debate, then surely they should be allowed to voice their opinion when it comes to the general elections.
So it is that, oh, it's a variation on no taxation without representation, isn't it?
Absolutely.
You shouldn't be required to contribute to a society that you have no say in the running of. It seems like a no-brainer. So that wobble I had was because of the susceptibility of the young brain to certain snake oils and poisons. But I albeit that Lawrence Rees's point was scientifically supported, it doesn't feel like a massive cut-off point. As we look back over our own lives, I don't think I reached 25 and suddenly became sensible. Not by a long chalk.
Oh no, and let's have a look at the last, say, 14 years in UK politics. If the vast majority of people that have voted for consecutive Tory governments have been over the age of 55, then surely we should put a maximum on that as well.
Yeah, I mean, especially as the older you get, then the less impact the choice of government is actually going to have on your life. By definition, because there won't be as many years of impact as there will be for younger voters, and in the case of 16 and 17-year-olds, non-voters. Richie, thank you. I mean, it is hard to resist elements of this. I wonder, I'd not looked at the numbers, but I wonder if would votes for 16 and 17-year-olds have stopped Brexit If they'd had a vote in the referendum, would there have been enough of them? I doubt it. But it might have changed the conversation. You'd have had an awful lot of parents and grandparents thinking twice about voting to impose economic sanctions on their children and grandchildren, wouldn't you? If their children and grandchildren were sufficiently engaged with the debate to really get stuck in because they actually had a say in it. Whereas if they didn't have a say in it, the temptation to leave it alone or to look the other way or to sit on your hands would have been a lot harder to resist. My 16-year-old is an idiot, writes Wayne in Ascot. So, you know, there it is. Ah, hang on, that's only the first line of his text. But so is my 75-year-old dad, who wrote for Brexit. Wayne, I don't want to ruin your day, mate, but, I mean, unless things have skipped a generation, you don't necessarily emerge very well from this message. It's 11:30. Thomas Watts has your headlines.
The head of the Unite Union has told LBC that Birmingham-style bin strikes could spread to other parts of the country. The walkout set to continue after refuse collectors voted to reject a new pay offer yesterday. A man has been arrested on suspicion of murder after an explosion at a house in Nottinghamshire. The body of 53-year-old David Howard was recovered from rubble in Worksop on Saturday night. The Foreign Secretary, David Lammy, has opened a summit to discuss the peace process in Sudan. The gathering of ministers from around the world marks 2 years since the country's civil war began. LBC weather, rain continuing in central and southern areas, drier in the north, a high of 18 degrees.
This is LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
I've dealt with many utility companies for many years across several properties, and Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
Octopus Energy, great value and outstanding customer service, recommended by Which? 8 years running.
31 years ago, the World Wide Web was introduced, the National Lottery launched, and Darwood and Tanner began making people smile. And whilst things have changed a lot since then, Darwood and Tanner's mission to provide the very best dental care through the very latest technology is still at the heart of everything they do. For our most comprehensive, tailored and complete dental implant, root canal and gum disease treatments, visit darwoodandtanner.co.uk.
In February, we sold a pack of Cadbury Delights for just a penny. But you missed out. Check out today's deals now at discountdragon.co.uk.
Lotto's big Easter bank holiday jackpot isn't just any jackpot. It's big. Like, big, big. Like, big! Sorry. £15 million must be won this Saturday. Lotto from the National Lottery. Play on app. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
11:32 is the time. I guess it's a question of trust as well. Trust and warmth. You trust 16-year-olds to exercise their vote. Why would you trust them any less than 65-year-olds? And if you're going to bring the argument about brain development into it, then a couple of you have pointed out that brain performance declines, I think, once you pass 40, measurably every year. That's why you can't remember why you wandered into the kitchen after you get that. That's probably not scientifically sound, that little nugget there, but you take my point. And it increases democratic engagement, and it makes young people care more. And they seem, as in so many things, to have shown the way somewhat in Scotland. So who resists it most violently, the notion of votes for 16 and 17-year-olds? People that don't like other humans? Is that too unkind? I don't hate all humans, I just don't like young ones. Or is that unfair? Is there a more sophisticated analysis than that that goes beyond saying they're a bit nuts, aren't they? Or at least I was a bit nuts. I didn't care about politics. Well, that's a you problem. Show me a 40-year-old who doesn't care about politics, and you don't show me someone making a case that 40-year-olds shouldn't have a vote. I don't know. 11:33 is the time. Noel is in Brighton. Noel, what would you like to say?
Hi, morning, James.
Hello, Noel.
Hi, so basically, just for a bit of context, I'm an A-level politics student. I'm 18 years old. And so I basically think the real big issue here is with education, because I finished school in 2023 and I'd form time every day for 5 years, and only once was it about politics ever. So I really think we need to think about education when it comes into this, because otherwise a lot of 16-year-olds are just going to be susceptible to populism. They've seen Nigel Farage on social media, as the previous caller was talking about.
And I give you the same answer that I gave to him. It doesn't make 16-year-olds any different from their granddads, who are equally susceptible to the oil and lies. So we don't deny the older credulous characters the vote. Why would we deny the younger ones the vote?
Because I think that it's just expanding the problem further unnecessarily. Mm. Because you're completely right with the older generation there. You know, they're susceptible to the right-wing media, as you speak about in your book, and it's just education. It's just a really big problem.
So if we do it hand in hand, if we take the Scottish model and you actually have a requirement for young people, for school pupils, to be taught modern issues, I think that's what they actually call it, and it includes domestic and international politics, you almost have a module on the importance of the vote. You know, you learn about suffragettes, learn about universal suffrage, but also about how relatively recently it was in our history that only landowners had the vote, or only men had the vote, or only some men had the vote. And you just drive that home educationally, then you create an environment in which I think the average 16-year-old would be demanding the vote.
I think if people were aware of how important it was, 16-year-olds would come to realise how important it actually affects their lives.
And it's not just the right-wing risk. I bet this doesn't happen to you very often, Noel. Another Noel has pointed out, this one's in Nottingham. Noel in Nottingham writes, why the focus on just the right-wing risk? Extremism. People who are susceptible to extremism. Populism. It doesn't have to be right-wing. What happened to you then? Why did you come out of that very apolitical education, determined to do a politics A-level?
Well, growing up in Brighton is definitely a factor, but I can't really put it all on that.
No.
I honestly couldn't pinpoint it to you, to be honest.
Fair enough.
I genuinely don't know. I just became interested back in politics in year 11 and just throughout my A-level. Once I come to understand the voting systems, I think that helps to sort of stray people away from populism.
Yeah, of course, and that's a big priority for your generation, or a big issue for your generation, and you're enjoying your A-level.
Yeah, very much so, yeah.
Good man. And final question, were you born on Christmas Day?
No, nearly. I was supposed to be born on the 27th of December, but I was just after.
I've only got one mate called Noel, and he was actually born on Christmas Day. Thank you, Noel. Lovely stuff. 11:36. I wonder whether Noel in Nottingham was born on Christmas Day. Frank's in Carlisle. Frank, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Nice to speak again.
Likewise.
So, when I was at school, and I'm a similar age to you, we had a sixth form general election.
Yeah.
And this would have been round about the time John Major had recently come into power.
Yeah.
So, all the regular political party reps did political party stuff, but it was won by a landslide by Chris, the independent candidate, and his policy was he would end unemployment by equipping every unemployed person with a toothbrush and setting them to clean the M6 motorway.
Yes.
And that's what got the vote. So my point there is that, you know, people are swayed by a really simple argument, but
My children had a primary school election where the lad who promised free sweets romped home, and then there was an epic scandal because it turned out he didn't have any sweets to give away after all.
Well, that's like school council, isn't it, where they all say, right, we'll get a pool table.
We'll abolish homework, bean bags and foosball, all of that. I mean, but this doesn't denigrate entire generations, a whole nation full of sixth formers, does it?
Because people voted for silly reasons, you know, for simple reasons to complex problems, on all of the votes I can recall in my lifetime.
So it's not an exclusive problem to this generation.
And I think, you know, a lot of the points that have been raised today, like education, if you were going to give the vote to 16-year-olds, you would hope that along with that, you developed as a nation a package of some form of education that everybody got. Because the guy who just said that he got no political information in his form time, I came out of teaching a few years back, but it depends on the school. Some places do it really well, some don't, because it's not part of the national curriculum.
And it should
then, be. Yeah, well, totally, it should be, yeah.
It really should be. And that is actually another reason in favour of giving them the vote, because it would go hand in hand with the education. No, what would it be? No representation without education. And that takes away the family tree argument as well, because you look up the family tree and see all the older people who never really got the education about the importance of of the vote, or indeed the importance of critical thinking, or do what they do in Estonia and other countries that might be next on Vladimir Putin's list if Donald Trump carries on gift wrapping Ukraine for him, where they teach in schools about how to have a relationship with the media, how to spot lies, how to spot genuinely fake news, alternative facts, snake oil and lies. Which brings us back to Donald Trump and his claim overnight that he that Ukraine started the war. I've felt today again, I've mentioned this to you a few times. Thank you, Frank. I've got two Franks, actually. Two Noels and two Franks. Can anyone do a joke? Is there a joke there? Two Noels and two Franks? So Noel in Nottingham, Noel in Brighton, Frank in Carlisle, and next up, Frank in Liverpool. But before that, I just mention that Simon Marks will join us in 10 minutes or so, because the days I feel it slipping out of reach, the days I feel I can't keep up with everything. So just three things today. Trump claiming that Ukraine started the war. Trump going after Harvard. Harvard University standing up to Trump's attempts to silence protest on campus. Where are all the free speech warriors who had such enormous bees in their bonnets about transgender issues, claiming that freedom of speech was really important? Where are they all when Donald Trump and the President of the United States of America is literally trying to shut down dissent? That student from Tufts, who was spirited off the streets, they provided the grounds for her abduction now by the authorities, and it was the co-authorship of an article for the student newspaper about Gaza, snatched off the streets. So there's that, there's the education stuff, there's the Ukraine stuff, and then there is some footage of him when he didn't realise he would be overheard, saying to the president of El Salvador that you're going to have to start building more facilities because we're going to start sending homegrown people to you, to your effective concentration camps shortly. And you sort of find yourself thinking, I can't keep up with all of this, but you have to try. And when I am struggling, I call Simon Marks to get me back on the straight and narrow. Or I speak to someone like the man I spoke to yesterday as a guest on a forthcoming Full Disclosure, Kenneth Roth, who ran the Human Rights Foundation for 30 years, Human Rights Watch. And I mean, who really, really knows what he's talking about? 11:41 is the time. As promised, Frank is in Liverpool. Frank, what would you like to say?
Oh, hello there, James.
Hello.
I just totally agree with 16-year-olds getting a vote.
Why?
I was very impressed when they had the referendum in Scotland. I interviewed quite a few. I was very impressed with their intelligence, the way they thought. I just disagree about us old age people. I mean, I'm 77 this year, and my views haven't changed an awful lot over the years.
Well, this is the problem we're generalising. Just because Wayne's 16-year-old son is a moron doesn't mean that all 16-year-olds are morons, and just because his 75-year-old dad is a moron, this is under Wayne's own reasoning, by the way, I don't want to be accused of maligning Wayne's family, doesn't mean that all 75-year-olds are morons as well. But is a 16-year-old, a 17-year-old going to be more susceptible to, brainwashing or grooming or whatever you want to call it, snake oil, extremism? I'm not sure.
No, I think we're all so susceptible to it. It's just amazing how people are brainwashed. I mean, I served in the army for quite a few years, and most of the people I served with were working class.
Yes.
And I'm absolutely shocked by the time they served and they were senior ranks, how their political views had changed.
Yeah, well, what's the biggest thing you've changed on? Since you were 16.
When I was young, hearing about being told by some of my family about the Dockers kids going round barefoot,
right,
and the Dockers being in pens, so my views haven't changed a great deal.
That's it, and it takes us back to the conversation we're having in the first hour about trade unions and collective bargaining. It's not that long ago that we had neither. As Frank reminds us, this is rather nice from Matilda. Thank you, Matilda. Hi, James. I've been listening to your show with my dad. What a wonderful way to spend the Easter holidays. I can't think of anything finer, as long as you're sharing an egg while you do it. And as a 15-year-old, I strongly believe that 16-year-olds should get the vote. We are no more susceptible to extremist propaganda than the older generations. In fact, we receive PSHE lessons upon PSHE lessons, explaining how to tell fact from fiction online. It leaves us much more prepared than those older than us who haven't received that information or education. I think we're also missing the point that our planet is in fact on fire, and we are the ones who are expected to live with and fix that. writes Matilda, making an incredibly powerful case for giving her the vote immediately, even though she's still only 15. It is 11:44. Let me squeeze in Mark, who's in concert. Mark, what would you like to say?
Hi, James.
Hello, mate.
I'm kind of sitting on the fence on this. I think when it comes to Brexit and climate change and important issues, which young people certainly tend to vote in favour of,
yeah.
Well, I think it's a good thing. But I remember I went to a half-decent school, and when I was in the sixth form, it came time to vote for the head prefect. And on the one hand, we had a very intelligent, educated, straight-faced lad. It was you know, talking about, and they all had to give a presentation. He was talking about free stationery and or subsidised stationery. And on the other hand, we had, you know, I'm thinking Nigel Farage, yeah. The snake oil salesman, the Nazi mind and everything. We had a class, you know, the year lunatic, who was saying, you know, I'm not being like we couldn't put, you know, two and two together. He was basically saying free pasties, free pizzas on a Friday and everything.
What's not to like?
And lo and behold, he got the popular vote. Now, luckily, the teachers, who I suppose had the sense, you know, overruled us. But you can see how it's kind of, when you're talking about a very flexible mind that wants fun and you know, wants
Yes, of course. I mean, I don't know if the system would accommodate that, someone turning up promising free pasties on Fridays.
Well, I mean, Nigel Farage done, you know? I mean, what might he come up with?
I meant literally, but you're right. I mean, look at the trouble George Osborne got into when he put a tax on pasties. So maybe your lunatic friend was actually a bit ahead of his time.
It is difficult, though. I'm not very trusting. Yeah, I guess I should be more trusting a 16-year-old, but I'm not just talking about myself, but
of course,
know, pretty much half the school voted for him.
Yeah, yes, I bet they weren't taking the election seriously, and I guess at some point you're going to have to either explain to them why they should, or make sure that they do. There's plenty of people who don't take elections seriously. You have literal loonies running in general elections, don't you, from the Monster Raving Loony Party. So that comic relief that is part of our democratic pageant wouldn't necessarily lead to the free pasty party actually ending up in Downing Street or sucking up a significant part of the vote. I love that. Here's a quick test to see how much you've been paying attention over the last 20 years. I don't think anybody, and it's remarkable given how often I recycle my own anecdotes and stories from my own life, I would be amazed, and let me just make sure that my inbox, I'm just going to close that brilliant message from Matilda. Ollie writes, don't give Matilda the vote, give her the bloody keys. I think I know what you mean. I stood for election at my school when I was 11, so that would have been the 83 general election, wouldn't it? I don't think anybody is going to satisfactorily or rather successfully guess that what party I stood for. All right, it's not the Monster Raving Loony Party, so get that one out now. And remember, I was 11, and the school leaving age was 13. It was my prep school. So I couldn't be any of the big parties because they got bagsied by the big boys. That's another word I haven't said for 30 years, bagsied. I said pegged yesterday in the context of pegging it out of the door. Not that one. Pegging it out the door and bagsied today. It's incredible how these words come floating back from the distant, distant past. So what part, and you have to know, 1983. I want to know if you know or if you're guessing. So try and communicate to me. If I've actually said it on air before, I can't remember. What party did I run for in the school general election in 1983? I'm not even going to give you a clue because that would be giving it away. It's 11:47.
LBC, this morning, on Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
We must go to Birmingham now. How is this relatively new Labour government dealing with this strike in Birmingham? Well, not very well. It's now entering its second month. So let's bring in Sharon Graham, as General Secretary of the relevant union, Unite. How likely is this could spread?
If the council and the government keep aiding and abetting and other councils that workers pay the price for bad decisions, these low-pay workers cannot pay the price.
So it could spread, Sharon?
If other councils decide to make low-paid workers pay for bad decisions that they did not make, then absolutely, of course.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on your radio and on Global Player, LBC.
I always thought it should be me looking after Mum in her golden years. After all she's done for me, I wanted to be the one to support her. But I couldn't be with her all the time. So I contacted Home instead. After their first visit, Mum was over the moon, telling me all about the laughs they'd shared over a cup of tea. And that's when I realised it didn't need to be me looking after Mum, just someone who cares for her like I do. Find out more about award-winning personalised home care at homeinstead.co.uk.
Where would we be without the curiosity to explore?
It takes us to new places.
Good
even got us to the moon.
And now there's never been a better time to satisfy your curiosity about electric cars. With great offers in our award-winning range, including the Ioniq 5 and Ioniq 6, available with £2,000 deposit contribution and 0% APR. Discover more at Hyundai.co.uk. Ends 30th June 25. Finance subject to status. Hyundai Motor UK Limited is a credit broker, not a lender. Terms apply.
This Easter at Lidl, we won't be beaten on price on our pick of the week veg. That's 2 kilograms of potatoes, a bag of parsnips, green beans or carrots, a swede, a bunch of spring onions, all for just 15p each. Now that's big on quality. And always Lidl on price.
Subject to availability. Selected stores. GB only. See Lidl.co.uk/spendless for details.
Make the most of longer, warmer days with Halfords' biggest ever Easter sale. We've got up to 50% off loads of motoring and cycling products, like dash cams, bikes, cycling accessories and more. Pop into your local Halfords today. Halfords, keep on moving for less. Offers subject to availability, full T's and C's and exclusions apply. See Halfords.com for details.
Lotto's big Easter bank holiday jackpot isn't just any jackpot. It's big. Like, big, big. Like, big! Sorry. £15 million must be won this Saturday. Lotto from the National Lottery. Play on app. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
This is the sound of a forehand shot. And this is the sound of a backhand shot. Hear the difference? Thankfully, some things are obvious. Like choosing Interactive Investor for your personal pension. As a Which-recommended SIP provider, with a low flat fee, and now £250 cash back when you sign up, the choice is obvious.
Advantage Wendy.
Search Interactive Investor Personal Pension. New SIP customers only. SIP values can fluctuate and you could get back less than you invest. T's and C's apply. Minimum £10,000 investment. Offer ends 30th of April.
Leading Britain's conversation. LBC with James O'Brien.
11.50 is the time. You've told the story many times, writes Joe in Doncaster. Somewhat sniffily, Joe, I think. It's the SDP. Well, if I have told the story many times, Joe in Doncaster, you weren't paying attention. Because it was not the SDP, it was the SDLP, which admittedly was a slightly strange choice of political party for a schoolboy in Worcestershire in 1983 to run for, given that it only had traction in Northern Ireland at the time. But that's who I decided to run for, as an advocate of Irish reunification at the tender age of 11. I got quite a lot of votes, unfortunately, probably for the same reasons that the pasty man got all the votes at that school in Durham at around the same time. I'm not sure it was a result of my carefully considered oratory. I think it was a bit more of a popularity contest, and all of my mates voted for me, despite probably not having a clue what SDLP even stood for. Simon Marks is just waiting in the wings. Before that, listen to this.
President Zelensky served out his offer to purchase more Patriot missile batteries.
Oh, I don't know. He's always looking to purchase missiles. You know, he's against. Listen. When you start a war, you got to know that you can win the war, right? You don't start a war against somebody that's 20 times your size and then hope that people give you some missiles.
So Ukraine started the war by very foolishly getting invaded by Russia. Amazing logic. And it's not funny, of course. Dan Snow, the history guy, has pointed out that in Hitler's last will and testament, dictated hours before he committed suicide 80 years ago in April 1945, Hitler insisted that no one had wanted war in 1939. It had been forced on him by international Jewry and its helpers. I've done it before and I will almost certainly be doing it again, but on the days when it feels a little bit like things are slipping away because so much is happening, we page Simon Marks, LBC's Washington editor, and here he is. That's one bit, the Zelensky bit. I think that the Harvard bit is relevant and the El Salvador bit looks like today's top three, Simon, but I've probably missed 10.
Yeah, well, there's always more. But look, I think that those comments yesterday in the Oval Office, and it's the second time at least that Donald Trump has publicly claimed that Ukraine started the war, and yesterday going further and saying, oh, well, Zelensky just always wants more missiles, always looking to buy more arms. I mean, it's the latest demonstration of the fact that he is continuing to try and tilt the outcome of peace negotiations in Russia's favour. His special envoy, Steve Witkoff, was welcomed to the Kremlin a couple of days back, absolutely with open arms by Vladimir Putin. Republicans on Capitol Hill yesterday, some of them, reacted to those comments by Donald Trump and got in touch with the White House to say, look, I mean, we are still, many of us, supportive of Ukraine and its war aims, but they are not in the driving seat of any negotiations that are going to take place. There have been moments when Donald Trump has expressed frustration over what he has argued have been attempts by Vladimir Putin to kind of run out the clock on this discussion about advancing a peace agreement. But, you know, those comments yesterday, like so many of the other things that the president says on so many different issues, were just laced with disdain and loathing towards, arguably, the bravest, most courageous European leader the continent has seen since Winston Churchill. And it is absolutely apparent that he is going to cut the legs out from underneath Volodymyr Zelensky and from the Ukrainian people at every possible turn, still fuming over the fact that the Ukrainians haven't agreed to hand over 50% of their valuable rare earth minerals to the United States for decades to come to repay America for what he insists has been $350 billion, sometimes it's $500 billion, depending on what day of the week it is, in his telling of U.S. aid to Ukraine. So further evidence that he's absolutely still tilting everything in Vladimir Putin's favor.
And no pushback in the room. We've circled around this subject for a while now, but it's going to get worse, not better, because you would expect a journalist to say, hang on a minute, Mr. President, are you suggesting that Ukraine started the war by getting invaded?
Yeah, no pushback in the room. Oh. I mean, let's be clear, the White House is defying now a court order that requires it to restore the Associated Press, the news agency, highly respected, to the White House reporting pool. And again, I've got to caution listeners that when you see these interactions now in the Oval Office and you hear that a reporter asked the president a question, invariably, the men and women asking the questions are not reporters. They are polemicists working for propaganda outlets owned and operated by Donald Trump's wealthy supporters and political friends. And so the entire pattern of conversation within those White House encounters has substantially shifted in the last few weeks in the direction of right-leaning news organizations that are now invariably front and center. Even over the weekend, an interaction with Brian Glenn, a propagandist from Real America's Voice, who is the partner of Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, the conspiracy theory believing representative from Georgia, in which Brian Glenn was literally blowing smoke at the president over the outcome of his routine physical over the weekend. Right. And the two of them were sort of, it was locker room talk between the two of them about the physical prowess and stamina of the president of the United States. It is rare now to see any kind of meaningful interaction in those encounters.
And we're only 100 days in. I hope the audio quality here is good enough. This is an exchange between Trump and the president of El Salvador, which was recorded almost by accident. Someone spotted it on the feed as they made their way into the room.
Homegrowns are next. The homegrowns. You got to build about five more places.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right. It's not big enough.
That's Trump describing how he wants to deport homegrowns to El Salvador next, and that the president there, Bukele, would have to build five more places. I mentioned Rolling Stone earlier as an antidote to the pseudo-journalism you just described, Simon, and they ran with the headline, Trump and Bukele bond over human rights abuses in Oval Office meeting. And I don't know whether the laughter in the background is more chilling than the words.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of the most shameful Oval Office encounters that I can remember. I mean, it's hard in the modern era to imagine anything more shameful than what took place there yesterday. Because Bukele, of course, is the El Salvadorian dictator, elected to power, but absolutely on the same kind of populist ticket that Donald Trump has espoused. Who is now acting as Donald Trump's private jailer. So you've seen hundreds of people, detainees, mostly Venezuelans, wind up in a terrorist detention facility in El Salvador, again, in defiance of court orders. The the checks and balances in the United States falling away by the day. And in that interaction yesterday, the president was essentially saying to Nayib Bukele, build another five prisons, because what he is thinking about doing is denaturalizing American citizens, stripping even American citizens who are convicted of crimes of their passports, of their citizenship, and sending them to El Salvador's gulag. This is now a theory that the White House is investigating and advancing. Rolling Stone, that you mentioned, reported on it just a few days ago. We've heard the Deputy White House Chief of Staff Stephen Miller advancing that there is a legal path for them to strip Americans of their citizenship. And at a time when they're saying to places like Harvard University, they want to come in and they want to audit the staff for the viewpoints of the faculty, the student body. They want to reduce the power of students, faculty, and administrators. That's why they're withholding more than a